We're going to reconvene. Next up on staff reports, County Manager Austin Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just give you and the folks in the room an update. We are moving forward on the county strategic plan. I've reached out to a consultant that is going to look at providing a scope that this board then would ultimately look at considering for some consultation and assistance in developing that plan. Probably start off as a community element to that and work our way inward as departments and then go from there. Waste management negotiations for the franchise agreement are going well. We're definitely bargaining in good faith. Some of the results so far in 30,000 feet is just better services countywide to all the residences and buildings and for businesses. Possible service to the Lockwood community in addition to what is already provided. A recycling component, especially for the large companies and as well as local residents. Non-mandatory pickups, such as what we have now. A better service, a more consistent service for the Highlands and for the Comstock. Free dump day adjustments that may be voucher-based where people can go on their own and not have to wait for free dump day. And having a portal such as a website and a phone portal where people can look and see the rates and they can complain and they can lodge concerns and look at what things are going on in waste management world. We had our coffee with the county, Danny Dotson and I, a couple weeks back, and we had a good turnout with good questions from the business community in Virginia City. There was no agenda to this workshop. It was just for us to listen to folks in the community and see what kinds of concerns they have and what kinds of ideas they have. We anticipate on doing this about quarterly. It isn't necessarily on any set agenda, and this is really just for that, for people to come and talk to us and have a discussion. This kind of ties into the town hall meetings that have been held throughout the county. We did have a Mark Twain town hall meeting last week, and this was really in particular for the flood project mitigation plan in that community, but we were also available to discuss other matters. So Jason Wisberke was there. He talked to local folks about the culvert project he's working on down there as we speak. Kathy was there and a lot of us other folks in talking about various issues of Mark Twain. The Highlands is having another town hall. This is on August 22nd. It's at 5:30, and this is once again non-agenda, but it's just to discuss residential, non-residential transportation, roads, and other matters that may be affecting the Highlands. It's really just an update to the meeting that happened at the last meeting. I'll let folks know what's going on out there. And last, we believe that the Delta, the saloon side, probably about August 26th to August 28th, that may be open for business. We're crossing our fingers, and I understand the date of somewhere between January and March of 2020 for the Sawdust Corner side is a realistic target time for that to be reopened. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Any questions for Austin? Okay. County Clerk, Ms. Dean. Deputy Vanessa, thank you. That concludes the committee and staff reports. We'll move on to item number 7 now. These are board comments. We'll take no action or public comment on this. Commissioner Carmona.
Not much today.
All right. In the absence of our tourism director today, Mr. Dotson, since our last meeting, we were able to enjoy Hot August Nights in Virginia City. We got the kickoff weekend to the event. And not only did we get the kickoff weekend, the following Thursday we had the poker run that came through town, but we had people in cars and car paraphernalia in Virginia City for about 9 days straight. So this has turned into be just one of the premier events that Virginia City is able to host. So we have a couple more years left on this contract, and each year it seems to grow a little bit more, and it gets a little bit more refined. The Hot August Nights staff and their volunteers just do a terrific job on organizing the event. They come in quick order and have it all set up, and by early Saturday evening, they have everything tore down, cleaned up, and put away. So they're just a great organization to do business with. Coming up, for, I think, for about the next 5 weekends in a row, we have special events going on. This weekend will be a rodeo. And the following weekend, we'll have this, during the Labor Day celebration, we'll have the Civil War reenactors in town. So that's enough of that for now. We'll conclude with special events on the following weekend, I think, you know, the 3rd. So next up, we're going to move up item number 22 at this point. This is consideration of letter of interest and appointment of a planning commissioner to fill the vacancy and serve the remainder of the term representing Precinct 4, Mark Twain District, on the Story County Planning Commission. Mr. Alcorn?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senior Planner Kathy Canfield is going to tie in for half of this. I'll just give a little bit of an update. Laura Kukuli, the representative for the Mark Twain District, has retired. It is a huge loss to that community, but she was certainly preceded by equal or even better expertise. Laura did leave a vacancy on the Planning Commission, and so at this point we posted this per policy for 2 weeks or 15 days. Kathy and Lindy and I, on two separate interviews, interviewed the available applicants. There was one applicant that was not available or could not be reached. And at this point, we have a recommendation. And I'm going to pass it over to Kathy and talk a little bit about what you feel. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Kathy Canfield for the record. We interviewed Adrienne Baugh, and we are recommending that she fulfill Laura's term on the Planning Commission. Laura's term ends on December 2019, so at the end of December. And then we'll be looking for positions again. Ms. Baugh is involved with the Mark Twain Community Center. She's also on our census committee, and she's involved with the school district also. So staff is recommending that she fulfill Laura's term.
Very good. Ms. Baugh, do you care to say anything?
Good morning. I'm Adrienne Baugh. I've been on the Mark Twain Community Center board for the last 4 years, and when Laura decided to retire, it looked like a good opportunity for me to be able to step up and help out with the community even more than I already have. I'm not a planning expert by any means, but I do know the community, and refreshing myself on the master plan, it's nice to know that the keeping it rural motto for Mark Twain is exactly what our residents would be interested in seeing go forward. And I'm just here to learn and to help represent our community the best I can. Absolutely.
Terrific.
Very excited to get involved.
Do you have any questions for the applicant? No? I think I don't have any questions for you. I think I just so you'd be prepared to do a lot of reading. There's always a lot of reading.
I've already started. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Baugh.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there any public comment regarding this item? Hearing none, if I can go ahead and get a motion from my fellow commissioner.
In accordance with the recommendation by staff, I, Jay Carmona, motion to appoint Adrienne Baugh to fill the vacancy and serve the remainder of the term representing Precinct 4, Mark Twain District, on the Story County Planning Commission.
I'll second your motion. We'll move to second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Congratulations and welcome aboard, Ms. Baugh. Next up is item number 8. This is discussion only. We'll take no action. This is a presentation by the Quad County Public Health Preparedness Program on the upcoming community assessment for public health emergency response, also known as CASPER survey in Story County.
Good morning, Commissioner. Sherry Nevin for the record. I'd like to introduce you to Jessica Rapp. We've been working with Jessica for the last several months on this survey, and she's here to give you guys a little bit of an update of what we'll be doing, what to look for out in the communities as we embark on this survey early next month.
Good morning. As Sherry said, my name is Jessica Rapp, and I am with Quad County Public Health Preparedness. We proudly serve Carson City, Douglas, Lyon, and Story Counties. And we are working with Story County Emergency Management to conduct a CASPER survey, which is the Community Assessment for Public Health Emergency Response. This will be the 3rd CASPER survey conducted within the Quad Counties. And what it is, it's a door-to-door survey where we have teams comprised of Quad County staff members as well as Story County staff members and volunteers. We put them out in our community, and they go to 210 different households, and they ask a few simple questions related to emergency preparedness, such as, do you have a 3-day supply of food that will not go bad, a 3-day supply of water, and so on. And then after those 210 surveys are completed, I take all the surveys back, enter the data, analyze it, and I'll have a report ready, and it will show how prepared our community is for a disaster or an emergency. And with that, it's all confidential. We don't collect any identifying information such as their name, date of birth. And our survey teams that are out in the community will be wearing bright red vests, and they will be clearly labeled Story County Casper Team. And they have bags as well that say Casper on them, so that way their community knows that it really is us.
Very good.
Are there any questions?
Any questions, Jay?
I do not.
I think it was a very worthwhile program.
Thank you.
Yes. And thank you for bringing it straight down.
Thank you for letting us.
Okay, Jessica, thank you.
We would just ask for everyone's cooperation with us during this survey. I know a lot of folks don't like people coming to their homes and soliciting. We're not soliciting. But if there is at a home, if there's a no trespassing sign, beware of dog, those houses will not be. We will not be going to those houses just for the safety of the survey takers. So they'll be. Hopefully we'll all be in marked county vehicles out in the communities, and we'll be going from a period of September 4th through the 13th. It won't be every day during that time. We won't be here in Virginia City during Camel Race weekend. We've taken that opportunity to go to other areas of the county. We'll have some morning times that we'll be out and about, not early morning, but mid-morning, and then we'll also be out in the evening to capture, so we're hoping that we'll capture all that. So after today's meeting, we'll work to get information out on social media, local paper, website, and all that so people are aware. So if you have any questions as we go along in this process, you can reach out to any of us, including Joe Curtis, and we'll be happy to answer any questions. So.
Great. Thank you. Thank you both. Next up, we'll move on to item number 9. This is discussion only. We'll take no action. Presentation on senior services in Story County.
Again, Sherry Nevin for the record, while we're waiting here for our slide to come up to the north first. I wanted to just give you a quick introduction of where we're at with this whole process. So in October of 2018, we began a process working with the Senior Center to develop a strategic plan for senior services here in the county. We held focus groups in each of the communities over the course of the last year, and we went on a best practice site visit. Stacy and I, we visited about 11 senior centers pretty much in the northwestern part of the county, and we learned a lot of stuff. So we want to be able to share with you today what we learned so you can kind of get an idea of our vision as we kind of move forward with senior services here in the county. So I'm not quite sure what's happening here, but Stacy has her notes if we don't get this right.
Well, as Sherry said, we started our strategic planning session back in October of 2018. So we began with a strategic plan retreat, and we took a couple of members from each community, met for about 8 hours, and determined what seniors in our community needed and expected from senior services. So during that, we realized we have 3 priorities. Our first priority was inclusion for all. So what that looks like is building relationships, welcoming places and spaces for something for everyone, marketing and public awareness. We wanted to have senior centers where it looked and felt good. It was inviting and welcoming. And staffing, where people who were a good fit and walked the talk. Equity for all was the second priority of ours, so accessible senior services, one-stop information and referral, reorganization of all senior centers in the county. We want to have a community buy-in, county leadership buy-in,
and public awareness once again. So our third priority is adequate funding. Funding and support for affordable living came up in that retreat that we had. So once again, we'll need the county buy-in for that. We wanted a cultural shift from how people see the problems to be solved to projects that can be created and implemented. And figuring out a dedicated funding stream. So creative sources for funding, diverse funding, and all resources leveraged for key shared priorities. After we did our retreat, we did our guided focus groups in the four communities, Highlands, Mark Twain, Virginia City, and Lockwood. We asked the same three questions in each community, and here's our questions. So question one, what is important to you and why is it important? All the areas said that seniors being checked in on during winter months, during the heat that we have here was important, whether it be on the telephone or in person. They would like to see a transportation program, more access to services, and navigating the systems and services that we currently have. The differences, Highlands wanted more assistance in the home. Virginia City Highlands and Mark Twain want to see more communication. Mark Twain has a fear when it comes to fire and police response because they are past 6 Mile, you know, a deputy getting to them in a timely manner, an ambulance getting to them. They want, in Lockwood, more access to the building, longer hours at the center. And Virginia City wanted to see a list of resources, one book where they can grab it, look at everything, and know where they can get the resources they needed. The second question is what would bring you and make you more comfortable at a senior center? So everybody wants more social clubs, special interests, and they don't like being called old because they aren't old. Senior centers have that stigma of a bunch of old people coming together to complain, and that is not what a senior center is. Differences, Mark Twain would like to see a comfortable, warming, welcoming environment. Virginia City wants to see more interactions with other generations. They like the kids coming in. They want more of it. Even though we have it, it wasn't known. The Highlands wants to see Meals on Wheels. So that was a big eye-opener for me, considering we do have the program out there. It's just not known. And Lockwood wants healthier choices when it comes to their meals. A smoothie bar, frozen yogurt, fresh fruit. They want the healthy parts. Question three. What programs or services have you heard about that you wish were available in your community? Everybody wants to see transportation on nights and weekends. Those calls where it's midnight and you're being released from the hospital, somebody to come pick them up. Exercise programs throughout the whole county. And education training on modern technologies. So how to download your photos on your phone and get them to your computer and the things that my generation takes advantage of. Up in Virginia City, they would like to see history talks and genealogy. Highlands and Mark Twain would like to see homemaker services. Highlands want to see Medic Express, just like the transportation. Mark Twain would like to see lifespan daycare, not just for seniors but for children. And Lockwood just wants access to services. So after we met with all our communities, Sherry and I took a road trip. So it was a 4-day road trip across Nevada to learn best practices. So we went to 11 centers in 8 different counties, and they're all very similar but so different. It didn't only teach us those best practices, but it allowed me to gain a relationship with other directors to go to throughout the year when problems come up that we need to work together on. So major takeaways that we got from that road trip was most of the centers have a dedicated source of funding, such as PIL, tax levies, county funds. All the counties were, or all the centers were supported by their counties except Winnemucca. Winnemucca was its own standalone nonprofit. All communities had a food pantry, but they were not located in the senior center. Each facility was very large, and they had lots of room for growth, expansion, storage. Like in that picture right there, that was just a small storage room, and only one of the storage rooms. All the centers had a board for the nonprofit side, and the members were highly involved in the senior centers, especially when it came to fundraising. So here's some more pictures of what we saw. On the left-hand side is Winnemucca. And that's the standalone nonprofit. So they have this beautiful craft room that I know my seniors would love. And they also had a store to sell all the crafts that were made. So they make the crafts in this room, sell them in the store, and all that money goes back to the craft room. Down below is the dining room. They fundraise all of their construction for this building, but they're also supported by mining. That middle picture is a tree of life. In almost every center we went to, there was a tree of some sort. And this one was the brightest and most colorful, but they're very popular amongst the communities. The next two pictures, that's just the dining room in Elko. It gives you the view of how big these centers are out there. And again, a lot of it comes from mining money. In Fallon, they just got a new building within the last 2 years. So this is their Meals on Wheels prep room. They have separate rooms for making desserts, separate rooms for making soup, and this is their separate Meals on Wheels room. Since they've had that new building, they've had a 40% increase in consumers in that building. And again, more pictures. So that's another Fallon picture of the kitchen. It is huge. They have more gadgets and equipment for a cook to use than anybody could dream about. Elko had this amazing medical room where they bring in doctors from all practices for seniors to visit with so that these seniors aren't driving to Utah or driving out of state, driving all the way to Reno to get the services that they need. And garages were very popular, and I never thought about that. Now that Mike knows about it, it has become a wish list item because in snow, he wouldn't even have to go outside and get snowed on bringing meals out to people. So now putting all of our pieces together. Some of this has already occurred, and we have taken some small steps, but it's going to take years for all of it to come together. So for inclusion for all, we would like to soon do an expansion of the Virginia City Senior Center. Very, very soon, revamp the Lockwood Community Senior Center. Equality for all, hiring a site director out in Lockwood that would allow oversight over that center. Look to bring a congregate meal site to the Mark Twain area and start exploring options into the Highlands on what we can do for a socializing setting. For adequate funding, everything needs funding to run, so the key to implementation is having that funding for senior human services. So with that, it brings us to our end. Are there any questions?
Mr. Chairman, may I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Me too. Stacey, would you like to talk about the site manager at Lockwood, what this person will be doing and kind of how that will improve that center?
So the site manager in Lockwood is there to provide oversight to the residents in Lockwood, help filling out forms, being that one-stop shop place out in Lockwood, extending building hours, and making sure we're in compliance with all grant funding that's out there, assisting me in applying for grant funding for Lockwood and having that additional oversight in hand in it all.
Thank
you. Jay? I don't want to admit it, but what's a tree of life?
What's a tree of life?
Yeah.
It's just, well, in that one, it was the kids and the seniors coming together, and they put their handprints as the leaves for the trees.
Okay.
And just building that community partnership between all. I think it was also, theirs was a donor tree, so anybody who donated had a little leaf on their tree.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was he looking to bring the Mark Twain here?
A congregate setting. So being able to bring the food down there in trays and sitting down with a group of people and enjoying your lunch. And Mark Twain, right now, we only do Meals on Wheels, but socialization is huge to a senior's quality of life.
Okay. Before you go on to explore the options for site in the Highlands, isn't there already been a site that's designated out there? And
actually, what we're looking at is a separate structure from where we currently are. ideally, it's going to be a duplicate building, and basically it'll just be a steel building that we can use for multiple uses. So that's what we're looking at right now. But location is
I think, where we're stuck.
Is there land available?
There is. I was talking with Mike Northern about maybe some other locations on the fire department land that we could use. It might be a little bit better off, so we'll see how we progress on that.
Okay. Anyway. So you had the Thelma and Louise tour, did you?
Yeah. Now to head to the south and see how they do it.
We learned a ton, and people were so welcoming to us, you know. We went to Austin, for example, and that's a one-man show there. She's the cook. She's the cleaner. She does everything there. Keep in mind, I mean, they have a very small population there. They don't even have enough kids to have a school right now. But she seems to get it all done. Eureka County, they've got a main center there in Eureka. They've got some beautiful senior housing right opposite, adjacent that. And they have quite a large facility, actually, out in Crescent Valley. So it's kind of a similar setting to what we have in here versus Lockwood. Mm-hmm. So we're able to learn some stuff from them on, you know, how they get supplies from here to there. And, you know, this site manager that we're looking for, Lockwood, we kind of modeled off of Eureka County, White Pine County, and Ely. You know, some of these centers that have a main area, and then they've got areas, you know, a couple hundred miles away from them. So, like I said, Stacy made some really good connections with folks out there. They've got a senior center association that's kind of sponsored by State Aging Services, so she was able to kind of ramp that up to folks who, you know, aren't necessarily, it's not easy for them to get to Carson for these meetings, but she was able to kind of talk to them, do some networking, and, you know, be that exchange business cards, and if you've got a question, how does it work here? It's always nice to have that open communication with folks that are doing a similar job. If someone's doing it well somewhere else, you know, why can't we kind of jump on to how they've done that and been successful?
It's great.
Well, if you want to see more pictures, we have a ton. So.
Okay. Thank you, Stacy.
Thank you.
Next up is item 10, discussion of possible action. Public hearing in which interested persons may present their views on bill number 111 regarding ordinance 19-300, increasing the residential construction tax in phases over the next 3 years. Mr. Loomis.
Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. This is a proposal that's been brought forward by the school district. It's a tax that's designed to assist them in their construction and maintenance projects. We had the first reading some time ago, and I see that Mr. Hess is here now. And we're, so this is a public hearing for people to express whatever interest they may have in whether or not to approve the residential construction tax. I don't know if Mr. Hess has anything else to add or not.
You know, the only thing new is approved maybe 2 months ago by the Board of Commissioners. Since then, we were at Department of Tax, Todd Hess, Superintendent of Story County Schools, sorry. Since then, we took it to the Department of Taxation, which is about a month ago, maybe a little bit more than a month ago, and they unanimously approved it as well. So it's a tiered up system.
Okay, thanks. Did you have any questions for either Todd or Keith?
Okay. No questions at this time.
Okay, so at this point, we can go ahead and open up for any public comment. If there's anybody who's opposed to this or is in favor of it, you're welcome to speak.
Chair and Commissioner Clay Mitchell, Virginia City resident. I just have one question, and this may have been covered in the first reading. I apologize for not being up to speed on it. I'm just wondering how the amounts were arrived on, if those are tied to some specific expenses that are expected in the future, or if it's filling a particular gap and projecting potential funding based on future growth and what that's going towards. I just wanted to speak kind of on principle. You know, as a general rule, I support local control over control at higher levels. So as we can move things here locally, fund things here locally that are local services, I support that. At the same time, as a fiscal conservative, you know, I always question new taxes or raising taxes, and that doesn't mean I don't support properly funding our local services. And so. And so those are kind of the things that are weighing in my mind as I look at this pretty substantial increase. And I'm wondering, since it seems like, for the most part, the school district is funded at the state level, and this is kind of a new arrangement where they're asking for funding from the county. I mean, I know it's already in place, but an increase. Wondering if there's plans for any sort of accountability mechanisms as you as commissioners would be giving them this new funding, any sort of return and report, or if it's go with our blessing and from there on they have that funding. So,
you know, I'm going to ask the superintendent to go ahead and speak on this because I would have to go back and look at my notes from when we agreed to this a couple months ago. And you can, if you wouldn't mind, Todd, explaining about the increases on this.
Sure. Thank you. And again, I apologize for just getting up to speed after the fact.
So again, Todd Hess, Superintendent, Story County School District. I'll do my very best to answer parts of that question to the best of my ability. The total that we brought in, the average of the last 3 years is like $6,300. We're getting it's $500 per permit. So that's what the math has gone to on that. I think it was first put in, and I apologize for not having some of my notes here. It was in the 80s, I believe, when the residential construction tax was first put in. It was it started at $500 and has stayed that. I've talked to two local contractors. One I know pretty well. His name's Greg Bumhass. And then the other one's Jim Collins. They don't have an issue with it. They gave me a verbal on it. They said if we wanted something in writing, they'd be happy to provide that. As far as the accountability of the tax, again, absolutely. It can't go to salaries. It has to be for capital improvements only. Very short synopsis of something that I have a long-term vision on, and until I'm no longer with Story County School District, it's going to happen. There's two schools we got to get out of for school safety issues. I brought up every safety expert in the West Coast to take a look at Gallagher Elementary and Virginia City Middle School. Back when Marshall's dad was there, when the school first opened, it was a public works project in the Depression. It certainly served its purpose. Then Columbine hit, and the second busiest street in a vibrant tourist town goes right down the center of the campus. We've done what we can with it. What my long-term goal, our great school board president, Jeff Nevin, we've talked about a lot. Our goal is to get those two sites on one campus, which would be down at the high school. That's the closest place we can put it, fenced area with a school resource officer. Will $6,000 a year pay for it? No, but we have to go out and look for those, and that's the sole purpose. I'm a lifelong resident, sixth generation, all that. That's the sole purpose of it. So can't be used for anything else, and my long-term goal is to, make every penny count and get those on one solitary site. And we've already had preliminary conversations, terrific ones with Austin and others, to see how we can make that happen. I don't know if that answered it very well, but did the best I could.
Yeah, no, that's good, Todd. And we have to find, the county, to answer on one of Clay's questions, does the county hold the school district accountable for this? Well, we don't really have a checks and balances program for that. I mean, you have state funding, but there are also a lot of taxes are paid through the county ad valorem that goes to school operations and school debt, things like that. But as my conversation with Assemblyman Wheeler last week, if everything stays the way that the legislature messed up this last time, Story County schools are going to get shortchanged about $1.5 million, according to the Assemblyman. So we have to look at whatever revenues are available to help the school district, be functional.
Yeah, the SB 543 was the new school funding formula that was put through. Augenblick did the study on it. And there's no doubt Clark County can't operate on 4 days operating expenses, Clark County School District, which is what they've been doing. So the funding formula was put in. It hurt the rurals. None's affected more than Story County, which would take, just as you said, about a 25% hit to its budget. Lander County is the next closest. So, we're planning for that to happen. We also, there's a commission in place to take a look at that. But yeah, that's something that Story County at this point is looking at some significant revenue drops in 2 years if that were to stay there. So like I said, we're just trying to make every penny count. All the other districts near us, all of our neighbors, are at $1,600, which is the maximum. We're the only one that's not. We just never, you know, I guess asked for that. And I'm not saying it's right to do what our neighbors do. It's not a Washoe and a Carson thing because it's for districts that are under 50,000 people.
And I applaud your efforts, too, of having the foresight to go ahead and think about creating a campus, having all schools in one secured area, too. I think going forward, that's a great plan, and I support it 100%.
Thank you. We've partnered well with Story County. We've had terrific, quiet conversation with Austin Osborne about how the county and the district can work together to help each other out. And, you know, we know that will continue.
Okay. And I think Austin wanted to weigh in on this.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In relation to Clay's questions, too, if you think about Painted Rock, that will ultimately come on about 5,000 units, likely. That comes out to about $5.5 million that would be generated for the purpose of building a school there and not doing it through a bond measure or something like that for the existing taxpayer. So that's one additional reason to look at something like this as a benefit.
Okay. I'll open up this. Any more public comment on this item? No? Okay, great. Then we'll move on to item 11 then. We're going to hash this over one more time. This is discussion of possible action, consideration of possible approval of bill number 111, regarding ordinance 19-300, increasing the residential construction tax in phases over the next 3 years. Mr. Loomis.
Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. This is the actual bill under which Ordinance 19-300 is being proposed. And this amends Chapter 3.52 of the Story County Code, which is the provisions that have initially provided for the residential construction tax. It's going to amend Chapter 3.52 to provide for the incremental increases over a period of years for the construction of residential dwellings, apartment houses, and the development of lots for mobile homes. The increases will be $1,000 for fiscal year 2020. It'll be $1,300 for fiscal year 2021 and $1,600 for each fiscal year thereafter, which puts it at the max for each year thereafter. And we've had the first reading. It has been published in the newspaper and is ready for possible approval today.
Very good. Okay. I'll ask Commissioner Carmona if you have any questions for the DA.
Not really any questions. I just want to put a comment on the record. I mean, like Clay said, as a fiscal conservative, I'm against raising taxes or fees. Unfortunately, I feel the commission's been put in a spot by the state that we have basically got to make sure our students are taken care of. And that would be the reason that I would support this. So I just wanted that on
record. Very good. Okay, at this time, we'll open up for public comment. Any additional public comment on this item? Okay, with that said, then I'll ask my fellow commissioner for a motion to approve this bill.
I, Jay Carmona, move to approve the adoption of Ordinance 19-300, increasing the residential construction tax.
I have a motion. I'll second it. It's been moved and seconded to approve Ordinance 19-300. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Moving on now to item number 12, discussion of possible action. Approval of the State Revolving Loan Fund contract CW2003 between the Nevada State Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, acting by and through the Nevada Division of Environmental Protection, and Story County for funding of the Gold Hill Package Treatment Plant. Ms. Nevin.
Thank you. Sherry Nevin for the record. At the April 2nd, 2019 Commission meeting, you provided authorization to apply to the Nevada Clean Water State Revolving Fund for funding for the Gold Hill Package Treatment Plant. The application was submitted and was approved for funding in the amount of $530,000 in principal loan forgiveness. This should technically be considered a grant. It is policy changes at a federal level that would need to get that changed. It's technically a grant. We don't have to pay this money back. They do call it a principal forgiveness loan. So the total cost of the Gold Hill Package Treatment Plant project is $1,653,000. And we have received $264,000 from USDA in loan funds and $5,000 in USD grant funding for this project. So out of, you know, this $1.6 million project, basically we're only going to be paying back $264,000. The rest is in grants. So as you're aware, this project will replace the existing community collection septic tank in Leach Field and Gold Hill with a packaged wastewater treatment plant. The proposed treatment plant will allow the county to treat the wastewater from Gold Hill and discharge the effluent in accordance with NDEP regulations. We have been working with them for several years once we identified there was a problem in that area, and they've been helping us to get to this point. Our hands are kind of tied in things that we can do, so we're all approved at that level, and we estimate that construction will begin in early 2020. I think you're aware of some of the issues that we've experienced with land and such like that. So as Hugh mentioned, nothing comes for free. Everything has some strings attached. Since this technically is a federal source of funding, it's from federal EPA down to state NDEP. So the contract, as you see there, is about 58 pages. A lot of that language is pretty much on par with exactly what USDA requires on projects. So there's nothing really out of the ordinary with this. We have a few things to address with some capital reserves and things like that, of which Hugh and his office are working on to get us there. So I have never worked on a particular project with NDEP, but they've been super helpful. We have had a project with them back in 2001 on the water side of things. So we're very thankful that they recognize this project as a significant need to our county and have been willing and able to give us this amount of funding to be able to do this project with as least impact to the ratepayers as possible. Because as you're aware, we have a very small ratepayer base, and if we do anything, it goes right to them because this is an enterprise fund, not supported by general tax revenues. So if anyone has any questions for me, I'm happy to answer those.
Any questions? Well, I don't have any questions. I've got a comment, though. I mean, this is a pretty sweet deal for the county. I know it's a lot of hoops for you to have to go through and Mike to get everything in order to do this. But to only have to pay $264,000 out of a $1.6 million project is, this is where it's great having the partnership with the government, the federal government, like we do. So we always go with them with hat in hand and come back with the hat almost full of cash, so it's a good deal. Thanks for all your effort on this.
Sure, appreciate it, and thank you for your support in helping us get to this point. So, I mean, this kind of thing would not happen if we didn't have partnership between the federal, state, and local levels. So this is kind of a good example of everyone coming together and working. So.
Exactly. Okay. So any public comment regarding this item? Hearing none? Commissioner Kamara, can you get a motion to approve?
I move to approve the State Revolving Loan Fund Contract CW-2003 between the Nevada State Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, acting by and through the Nevada Division of Environmental Protection and Story County for funding of the Gold Hill Package Treatment Plant, and authorize the chairman of the board or his designee to sign obligating documents.
Motion. Second your motion. We move to second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. All right. Moving right along now. Item number 13. This is discussion of possible action. Approval of the Gold Hill Sewer Package Treatment Plant, USDA, project contract with Far West Engineering for professional services.
Again, Sherry Nevin for the record. Back in about April as well to the May period, we signed off with USDA on a letter of conditions to fund the Gold Hill Package Sewer Treatment Plant. Again, that's a long list of laundry items that we must go to. It's called the letter of conditions that must be met prior to USDA giving county authorization to go out to bid and proceed with construction. As I mentioned on the last item, it is anticipated that construction will not commence on this project until early 2020. However, staff has been busy working to make sure that we have these conditions met prior to that time. One of the conditions is the engineering services contained within the task order being presented to you today. This task order is part of the existing master services agreement with Far West Engineering. You will note that Deputy District Attorney Keith Loomis brought up an issue to me as far as some language goes that is currently in the Master Services Agreement and some modifications that we'll have to make to meet the USDA requirements on these DJC contracts. So we'll work with Far West to get that taken care of. It's just some very pretty minor language cleanup, I think, on that. So the services contained in this agreement are very similar to every USDA project that we have worked on thus far. They'll include project management, package plant procurement, engineering design, bidding assistance, construction management, resident project representation and archaeological monitoring, and owner-directed services. So Far West, again, will help us through the bidding process, through design, and then we also have the requirement from USDA to have a resident project representative and do archaeological monitoring. The archaeological monitoring on this project should be significantly less than what we saw on the project we did here in Virginia City. We're only being required to have that on site during the digging process. So as it's a pretty small project, I mean, we don't anticipate the cost on that being significant at all. So.
Yeah, we're not going to be disturbing that much soil down if we were here in town.
No.
Okay. Any questions for Sharon, Jay?
Not at this time.
Okay. Any public comment regarding this item? That goes off easy. Okay. With that, Commissioner Carmona, can I get a motion to approve this contract with Far West?
I move to approve the Gold Hill Sewer Package Treatment Plant USDA project contract with Far West Engineering for professional services.
I'll second your motion. It's been moved and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you, Sherry. Moving along now to item number 14, discussion of possible action. Consideration of possible approval of the Dayton Valley Area Drainage Master Plan, Resolution 19-553. You going to take this?
I'll start it, if you like, Mr. Right. Chairman. Thank you. Austin Osborne for the record. Kathy's going to go ahead and take over, and then the folks from J.E. Fuller will continue after that with the technicalities. Just to remind us, this was a collaborative relationship we have with the Carson Water Subconservancy District. You see Ed James, the director, is in the audience. Thank you for taking your time, Mr. James, and working also with Mark Twain, Lyon County. And so this is really a dual county project as it affects both. And it's really just to evaluate and identify flooding and sedimentation hazards in both of these communities, and most importantly, to help our team, especially Jason and his public works crews, plan ahead for where we should install future flood detention and culverts and easements across wherever needed to create a long-term sustainable plan down there for flooding and storm-related issues. At this point, I'm going to pass it over to Kathy. Thank you, Kathy.
I think Austin has succinctly put that for us. I'd like to introduce Mike Kellogg. He has a presentation for you. I believe most of this presentation was also given to the public last Thursday at a public meeting at the Mark Twain Community Center. We had about 25 to 30 residents maybe show up and listen to the presentation, and afterwards they were able to ask questions and look at maps. Some of the large maps that they had displayed, I also have copies of in my office, so if you hear of anybody having questions, I do have copies of those maps. So
okay. Nicole, could you pull the light source again, please?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. My name is Mike Kellogg. I'm with J.E. Fuller. I am the project manager for the Dayton Valley Area Drainage Master Plan, and I've been asked to come here today and present an overview of the study and then address any questions that you might have. I would also like, before I begin, to introduce Richard Wiskowski, my colleague. He was the lead project engineer on the study, who will also be available for questions. The feedback that we received from the public meeting from last week was very positive from the residents. We met with residents in Mark Twain area, presented this basic same presentation to them, and myself and other members of the project team and Austin received very positive feedback from that. So that was great. So I'm going to just first begin by defining for you what an area drainage master plan is. This is the first study like this in Story County. An ADMP is a planning level study of flooding hazards within a particular watershed. And I'll show you in a minute that the project area of watershed that we looked at for this study. Generally, there's two goals in an ADMP: to develop a comprehensive understanding of existing condition flood risk. And then the second major goal is to develop some alternative mitigation solutions for those flood risks. Project funding for this was primarily through what's called a cooperative technical partner grant from FEMA. Carson Water Subconservancy District is a cooperative technical partner with FEMA, and they applied for and received a grant for this study. Additional funding was provided by Lyon and Story Counties. Carson Water District served as the kind of administrator of this project between us and FEMA. And then the technical team for the study was J.E. Fuller and Lumos and Associates. There were a lot of elements involved in this study, and I'm going to review these briefly in the next several slides, but I want to just list them out here for you. There was a lot of technical elements in this study and a lot of interaction with the public. We collected everything we could. That figure on the right shows the total project area in the purple. It includes everything that drains to Dayton Valley north of the Carson River. Also includes the Gold Canyon watershed area. So we looked at flood insurance studies, FEMA floodplain mapping. Recently, the Army Corps of Engineers completed an alluvial fan hazard mapping assessment. We were able to utilize that information. We looked at geologic mapping, and we collected everything we could from Bull Story and Lyon County on the watershed area. One important component of this project for us was gathering resident flood experience. So we had an open house back in May of last year where we met with the public and asked them to tell us what has been your flooding experience. We had maps. They identified areas where they experienced repetitive flooding, sediment issues. We asked them to provide photographs and videos. We also set up a website where they could go and click on a location, their house or somewhere that they knew about, that experiences flooding in the community and upload photos and videos. And we had several residents do that. And that information was very valuable to us in calibrating and verifying our modeling. Recently, the U.S. Geological Survey completed a regional topographic mapping study for the greater Carson area that also included our watershed. This type of mapping is quite expensive and would normally need to be funded as part of this project, but fortunately, this was available, so we were able to utilize that information, which saved a lot of money from the Carson Water Subconservancy District and the counties by being able to use that information. So one of our initial assessments was to look at the entire watershed and try to get a handle on what kind of flooding was out there and how do we go about addressing it. So you could see this figure on the right. This is a shaded relief map for the project area, and you can see there's a couple big differences. The upper watershed area, which is all of this here, looks very, very different than this area down here. This is the upper area, very mountainous. I think Virginia City is located right around here. This is where we are today. The flooding that occurs in mountainous areas like this is very, very different than what occurs down here. This landform is what we call a piedmont. And a piedmont is that sloping surface transition between mountains and a valley bottom. So that sloping surface between the mountains and the Carson River, which is down here, is this piedmont. And the flooding characteristics are very different here than they are up here. And this map shows that. This is one of our modeling results. In the upper watershed, we have what's called tributary flooding, which you have a lot of single channels converging together to one channel. And that's how flooding and flow accumulates up in this upper area. But once it hits this Piedmont surface, it transitions to what we call distributary flooding, which flow splits in the downstream direction. And the further downstream you go, you get more and more channel splits. And that's a very unique type of flood hazard And that is what is impacting all the residents in Dayton Valley. So we wanted to make sure we had a really good understanding of these processes that are occurring out there. We also looked at historical flow patterns, and we went and looked in the library at UNR and at Bureau of Mines and Geology and found a 1948 aerial photograph, which is as far back as we could go, but it predates much of the development in Dayton Valley. And we found that over time that many of the channels have changed. Some of them have been modified by man-made diversions and other things, but many of the channels have been relatively stable in the last 48 years. And so that was an important thing to understand for this study. A large technical component of this was what's called hydrologic modeling, and that is essentially coming up with and determining what types of storms occur in this watershed. What are their intensities? How often do they occur? And we looked at three different storm events and modeled. The first was what we call the 25-year, 24-hour storm, to be compliant with county design standards. We wanted to make sure we used that storm in our assessment. The other two storms we looked at were the 100-year 6-hour and the 100-year 24-hour. And those are a little bit misleading in the sense that those storms don't necessarily occur every 100 years. That is a statistical probability. That means at any 1 year, that size of storm has a 1% chance of occurring. And when you extrapolate that out in time, that means approximately once every 100 years. But you could have a 100-year storm, three of them in any given year. It's just a probability. But these are standard regulatory storms that most communities use for regulatory purposes. And so we wanted to make sure we included those. The Nevada Department of Transportation has very recently modified their methodology for coming up with rainfall statistics, and so we wanted to make sure we used that very latest information from NDOT. And in fact, we were working with NDOT as they were completing their study, and this is the first project where that new NDOT method has been applied. So once we understood the hydrology, the rainfall, the storm patterns, all those things, we then needed to develop a model that routes that storm water down through the community, and that's called the hydraulic model. We used the latest technology. We did what's called a two-dimensional model. And the study area is so large, and we wanted to have really high-resolution information for the county, we ended up using three different models. The upper watershed, which is this area here, was one model. That lower watershed, or that Piedmont area, was another model. And then because Gold Canyon does ultimately empty out here into Old Town Dayton, we wanted to make sure that we included the entire Gold Canyon watershed, and that was a separate model. These are very, very large models. And our model, if you can picture laying a grid pattern over the whole watershed, we used a 15-foot by 15-foot grid for all these models. So what that means is that you can go anywhere in this community, and you can. We have now very detailed information every 15 feet. We have flow depth information, how fast the water's moving, how deep is it, how much is coming down, every 15 feet in the entire project area. To do a model of that resolution takes a lot of time, and so there's a lot of those individual grid elements within the watershed. So for the upper watershed, we had over 4 million individual grids, 2.6 million for the lower model, and 2 million for Gold Canyon. To develop these models, we used all the information that we had collected throughout the project study area, including the locations of existing culverts and storm drains. And then we wanted to verify those results, and I'll show that in a minute. These are the results of flow depth for just that lower Piedmont area. For the 25-year storm on the left and the 100-year storm on the right. And I recognize these are a little bit difficult at this scale. I have some animations to show you that are a little more clear. So this is a flood animation of the existing condition. So this is what happens now if a 100-year type storm were to occur in the project area. And this is just showing you that lower model. I'll let this repeat one more time. So this is a 24-hour storm, and I've sped it up to be only about 10 seconds long. So a real storm wouldn't happen this quickly, but it illustrates the type of flooding that occurs in this area. And you can see all these many, many channels that are splitting and distributary in that downstream direction. This, for reference, this is the Carson River down along here. So the landforms that are present on that lower Piedmont area are defined primarily as alluvial fans, and that's a specific type of landform that has very specific types of flooding hazards and sediment issues. And one of the things that characterizes alluvial fan flooding is this concept of flow path uncertainty, that during an individual storm or over time, the flow path can change on these landforms. During one storm, it might be kind of pointed over in this direction, and then we might get some sediment that comes down and blocks the channel, and it pushes, and now flow is going in a completely different direction. That can happen in a single flood event or over time, and so that's a very real process that's happening out there, and we wanted to make sure that we account for that in our analysis. So we did a full flood path, what we call a flow path uncertainty analysis, to account for those potential changes in flow path over time. So important with any model like this is to verify your results. Are our results reasonable? And one way to do that is to compare your model results with historical information from gauges, like stream gauges or rainfall gauges. Unfortunately, there are no gauges in this area, in this watershed, and so we didn't have any direct storm information to compare to, but what we did have was the information we collected from residents that showed where they had seen flooding and what it looked like. And so we made sure that our modeling matched what they had experienced. That was one way we verified it. We also used some USGS data. They've published what they call regression information for regional information based on storms for this area, and they developed this curve, and all of these individual little black dots represent storm events that have occurred throughout history where they've been able to collect it. And the orange and the green show our results from our study, and we found that these plot within the USGS range of values, and so we felt confident that our results were reasonable. Sediment is a big issue in Dayton. And so we did some pretty innovative and interesting sediment engineering analyses for this study. We collected 24 sediment samples throughout the watershed, and we identified washes with high sediment transport capacity, the ability to transport large volumes of sediment. We identified where these watercourses were and came up with some actual quantitative estimates of volume of sediment being transported through the system. This figure on the left is all the locations of our sediment samples that we collected. And this figure on the right is relatively complex and would take me a while to describe it. I'd be happy to come back to this if you have questions. But these are some of the results of our sediment analysis. So now that we have all this great data, we wanted to then identify specific types of hazards that are present in the community. Three in particular: pedestrians, vehicles, and buildings. So this figure on the right shows areas that are of high risk to vehicles during a storm event, say a 100-year storm event. And the little red stop signs represent areas what we're calling very high risk. The little yield signs, the yellow ones, represent areas of high risk that now the county has this information. So during a large storm event, they know which roads are hazardous, which ones maybe should be closed to the public. Road crews can go out and identify these and close roads before anybody gets hurt or any damages occur by people trying to cross at these locations. This figure on the left represents flooding hazards to pedestrians. Again, during a large storm event, these were locations where it would be very dangerous for pedestrians to be. Some of this information is intuitive, like you wouldn't want to be standing in the middle of a wash when a flood comes. But if a street is flooding at depths that could be dangerous, we wanted to make sure to identify those locations. So this is another good data set now that the county has. And then finally, the figure on the right is our flood risk to buildings. We looked at how much depth is up against all of the buildings in the project area and identified the buildings which have some sort of a risk due to flood depths. We also used what's called a HAZUS analysis. This is a FEMA, HAZUS is an acronym, it's a FEMA process that FEMA uses to identify or estimate potential economic loss from a storm event. Lots of natural disasters, but in this case we were looking at flooding. So those three storms that we looked at right here, the 2500 years and the 200 years, we looked at if one of these storm events occurred within the project area, how much potential damage would occur. And this kind of provides a baseline for how much risk is out there economically if these types of storms were to occur today. So this project area has some very unique challenges that we needed to address. There's minimal drainage infrastructure out there today. We have these alluvial fan landforms that provide this very hazardous, unique flood risk. And we have highly distributary flow that becomes very difficult to manage as it splits in the downstream direction. So we wanted to provide the counties with a community-wide level of solutions. And this little brain or this little flow chart here just kind of shows the process that we went through, where we had a brainstorming session with a lot of really smart engineers and came up with some concepts that we thought would mitigate. And then we test those concepts to make sure they're going to work. We do all the engineering calculations, and then we run them through our models to make sure that they're actually going to provide mitigation. So we came up with seven systems that we identify, and systems were grouped by areas that kind of all are impacted by flooding within an area. So we have, this is the Mark Twain Estates area up here, and so we have what we're calling the Mark Twain system. All of this stuff in red is the Mark Twain system. And all of the systems throughout the project area are composed of different engineering elements. So we have detention basins, channels that collect flow into the basins. We have conveyance channels that move the flow downstream in a safe way. We have areas where we're proposing new culverts be installed, larger culverts in locations that have what we feel are undersized culverts, new storm drains. And then one of the things that we were specifically tasked for this project is the Cardelli Ditch. Frequently when storm events occur, we have flow that gets into the ditch, and that then moves downstream and it floods residents that live along the ditch. So we were asked to look at solutions that would mitigate this particular issue, and so we did that as well. This is an engineering plan. So part of this study, we took our engineering concepts to a 15% design, and this is an overview of all the different engineering structures that we're proposing as part of this drainage master plan for the whole area. So this includes all of the basins and channels and culverts and everything that we that I discussed previously. Again, this is just for reference. This is the Mark Twain Estates area up here. This is a more zoomed in view of one of those structures. This is a basin with a collector channel out here that's collecting flow that's coming down the Piedmont. It collects the flow in the basin. This is another major channel that's coming in that's providing flow that collects in this basin. That flow is then released in a controlled way into a channel, or maybe a channel with a combination of a storm drain that gets that flow down to Highway 50 in a safe way, and then down to the river ultimately. So this basin would collect both water volume during a storm event and sediment. We've included sediment in our volume calculations. So over time, these dew would fill with sediment, and so maintenance would be required to remove that sediment when these storm events occur. This is just a view of the Cardelli ditch. We are proposing some siphons and pipes over the ditch at the locations we identified where that off-site stormwater is getting into the ditch. So here's another animation. This is with the mitigation structures that we've proposed, and you can see these basins up here filling up with water during the storm event. Again, I recognize this scale is a little difficult to really see all the detail. I have another one, but the depths over here represent feet, the different colors. So I'll let this run through again. So as these basins fill up, you'll see them get deep. They get between 5 and 7 feet deep with yellow, and then as they drain, you'll see the depths go down to 2 feet and 1 foot, and as these basins slowly drain over that time. So this is a view of the Mark Twain Estates area, and the picture on the left, or is existing condition flooding. This is the way it floods right today. And so the one on the right is with a series of basins and channels in place. And so I'll let these play through again. I want you to just kind of pay attention to the area here within Mark Twain Estates, what this looks like now, and then what it looks like with our proposed alternatives in place. So one of the things we wanted to do for the county was provide a priority list of, well, there's a lot of structures here, and it's certainly not feasible to construct them all at the same time, and you'd want to phase them in over time. So which ones would we recommend constructed first? And so there's a lot of information to consider when doing that kind of recommendation. So one of the things we looked at was how many buildings are removed from the flood risk by construction of these different systems. These are the systems over here, and the total number of buildings removed. And so that's just one component that we looked at. We also looked at, you know, percent of buildings removed. We looked at overall area that is removed. We looked at cost of construction, long-term maintenance cost, all sorts of different factors to come up with a recommendation. And this is kind of a nerdy plot, I recognize, but it's a really good way to look at all that information in one place. So down here we have total area removed from flooding on this x-axis down here. On the y-axis, we have number of buildings removed from flooding. So the higher up you go, the more benefit. The far to the right, the more benefit. And then these are the systems. The colors represent the different systems. So blue is the Mark Twain system. This is the Six Mile Canyon system. And then the relative size of the bubble is how much they cost to build. So when you put all this kind of information together and you plot it like this, it helps us look at, well what's the best system for the price and for the amount of benefit, et cetera. So after looking at all that information, we came up with this priority recommendation that we're presenting to the counties. This is our recommendation. There's certainly no obligation that the county needs to follow this. But we did look at both 100-year level design for all of the structures. We also looked at 25-year design. And the reason we did that was, depending on the characteristics of the watershed, sometimes a 25-year storm basin and channel is going to be get you most of what you need for maybe even your 100-year event. But what we found in this case was that the 100-year level basins and channels and culverts provided significantly more benefit and removed a lot more people from the flood risk. And so we're recommending the 100-year design for all of our structures. But these are individual structure names. These are systems. So we're recommending which system to build. Now, Mark Twain is the largest system in our project, and so we wanted to provide, and it's composed of many basins and channels and storm drains and culverts, and so we wanted to provide Mark Twain a specific priority. So these are all the individual names of basins and storm drains. So within Mark Twain, we're recommending this priority list, again, 100-year level design. So we also wanted to provide the county with some information on potential grant sources for construction of these kind of things. This is just three different sources of grant funding that's possibly out there that the counties might pursue, either full funding or partial funding for construction of these type of facilities. So with that, I will take any questions that the commission may have or anyone else on this project. Or if you want to go back to a different slide, I can go back and we can look at that in more detail.
How was it, Mark Twain? I thought you guys did an outstanding job with your presentation. So
thank you. You were at the meeting there?
I was, yeah.
It was a good turnout. We used all the seats available. There were standing room only.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, it's a great presentation. You've given us a lot to digest here. Of course, approving this this resolution, we're not committed to any financial obligation at this point, are we?
I can explain a couple of things too.
Since FEMA was your recommendation, I think we've had issues with FEMA going that route in the past. Is that okay? Go ahead.
Just on this, this is a plan, just like the master plan. It tells us as staff where to go as far as developing everything that you described. It isn't a commitment on anything. And one thing it's important to note, some folks brought up at the Mark Twain meeting that detention basins on my property, it's a plan. And we reminded those folks that, you know, if we were to build such a detention basin or anything like that was to happen, we would work with local people. It might have to get moved around, whatever. Some of the culverts go through, or some of the recommended culverts go through private properties. We would have to work with those folks collaboratively on establishing easements. Perhaps there's a way we can do a trade for a driveway approachment for an easement. Who knows? You know, all different kinds of things. But this at least tells us where we are, what exists, what potential planning there is, and then we can work on a case-by-case basis to actually move forward with that. And the only thing I just want to say is thank you to the parties, to you folks, to Ed and his team at the Subconservancy of Lyon County. This is really a perfect example of a regional approach to solving a regional problem and also solving a local problem for our Mark Twain community. This is wonderful to see this much support from all the agencies, and this, I think, will end up in the future as a good thing for everybody.
Well, we've had major flooding in Mark Twain in areas that hadn't flooded before either, so without being able to control where the rain falls, you know, whether you will be a fan is going to bring this water too. Mm-hmm. So,
one thing I didn't quite emphasize, which I think is one of the biggest benefits of this study, is now the counties have this comprehensive, high-resolution, detailed existing conditions model. So as future development occurs, everybody has the same data set to work from. So now when a developer comes in and say, I want to put my development here, we know now exactly how much flow is getting to that site. And now we could tell them this is how much flow and volume, and now you have to, and so then the next developer is using the same consistent data. They're not coming in trying to do their own thing. So that's a huge benefit to the counties to have this now comprehensive data set available to them moving forward, aside from, you know, the next step of the mitigation as the counties decide to move forward in their own time frame and schedule and priority. So,
well, watching your models in operation there, it gives a good reason why there's a whole bunch of vacant land undeveloped down there in that one area.
Yes.
Because it floods every time it rains.
Yeah, Six Mile Canyon is the most hazardous area in the study, and that's largely undeveloped because it's been recognized as such over time. And so,
what about the portion that right on the Story County, Lyon County line? There's hundreds of acres that are undeveloped.
Yeah.
Because it floods every time it rains.
Mm-hmm. Maybe
where they put a detention base in, they could put in a water ski park.
Anything's possible. If you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, this would be the idea of what we would like to see happen in our other communities. Far West has done a kind of a preliminary flood retention and drainage study across the county in 2011 as far as generally what we look at. But taking a study to this detail to Lockwood would be probably the next priority, which show the same kind of animation, the same kind of potential resolutions for that community. And then we could go to the Highlands and then Tri-Center and do the same exact thing. This is kind of the beginning.
Okay. Is there any public comment or questions on this item? Hearing none? Okay. Jay, if I go ahead and get a motion to approve the resolution. Do we need to read the resolution, Council?
This is only for discussion at this point. We look at the agenda as possible action, but the agenda item itself is only requesting discussion.
I thought the second item was discussion. This one was action. There's no action on the second one. That is the adoption of the elements. The first one is what everything you saw. The second one deals with specific goals and objectives. That one we're not ready yet.
Okay.
And it's not necessary to read the resolution. It is available here.
Okay. Thank you.
This question of the board.
The Story County Board of County Commissioners resolves to adopt the Dayton Valley Area Drainage Master Plan by Resolution 19-553.
I have a motion. I'll second your motion. Moved and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. All right, which moves us right along to item number 15. Discussion of possible action. Consideration and discussion about the Dayton Valley Development Guidelines, a supplement to the Dayton Valley Area Drainage Master Plan. Ms. Canfield.
Thank you. Yes, we're not going to take request any action be taken on this. Just more to give you a heads up. This is the guidelines are based on the science and the document that you just adopted. These are guidelines for developing in these areas and the types of review and the types of mitigation that would be required on individual properties. The consultant has prepared a thorough document with this, and staff is now taking the document and talking with our Public Works Department and the Building Department and Planning Department, just trying to coordinate to see how these things would be implemented and which things that we think are appropriate to implement and how to implement them. So we're working on that. But this is the next phase after that, having that document.
I think we're already ahead of that right now, aren't we? We're going ahead and installing additional culverts and larger culverts
in the
Mark Twain neighborhood as we speak, right?
Yes, and so this would be something too when, now that we have this science to understand this, if somebody comes in and wants to build a garage in the middle of this and it might direct flow or it might do this, this will help us help them determine where might the best place be, what they could do on their property so that it doesn't impact adjacent or downstream people, that we're not directing it off onto somebody else's property. So that's what this document is, kind of the next step then for how is staff going to use this information to help individual property owners develop their properties.
Utilize the Lockwood stilts,
right? Well, that kind of gets into that. Part of what Kathy's talking about, too, here is we want to make sure if a large subdivision or a large user comes into the area, we want them to do a full flood study to make sure it's consistent with the V's. Somebody wants to do a single-family residence on a 40-acre parcel adjacent to Mark Twain, we don't want to make them go through that much of a very expensive study. That's what Kathy is looking at, is what do we want to look at in adopting at these different tiers of levels and still maintaining consistency with both the Lyon County and our plan.
So these guidelines are available on our website if anybody is interested in looking these over. Staff will be looking this over also and adjusting to however we see fit based on our experiences and our regulations that we have, and then we'll bring that back before you for adoption.
Okay. Anything to add to this?
Again, I think it's great. I think it gives some direction to Public Works, at least. You know, we're not going to be wasting money putting in culverts in an area that we know are going to be 36-inch or, right, you know, 18. But like I said, I think for the presentation, it's fantastic.
Does anybody have any questions or comments? No public comment? Okay. Very good. Mr. Kellogg, thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming today. Mr. James here for moral support, or is he?
Moral support.
Okay. Good to see you, Ed. Next up on our agenda today is item number 16, discussion of possible action to authorize the county manager to approve a contract with CFA Incorporated for assistance in professional planning and engineering services related to any planned unit development and or large land subdivision applications or proposals in Story County. This contract will provide assistance to the county planning staff with certain civil and engineering review of such applications and projects, although there are no such applications occurring or anticipated to occur at this time. Mr. Osborne?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Working with Mr. Loomis and the contract language, we would like to ask to continue this one more time to the September 3rd, 2019 board meeting here at the courthouse.
All right. Any questions for us before I ask for public comment?
No.
Okay. Any public comment on this item? Can I get a motion to continue this? September the 3rd?
That's right.
September the 3rd?
Make a motion to continue this item until the September 3rd meeting.
I'll second your motion. Move to second to continue to September the 3rd. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next up is item 17, discussion of possible action. Approve resolution number 19-552, appointing Austin Osborne as administrator to administer process and approving reimbursements for public infrastructure constructed by TRI Center LLC or other developers and dedicated to Story County as required by the TRI Public-Private Partnership Capital Improvement Plan. Mr. Osborne.
Mr. Loomis, I think, has this, Mr. Chairman.
Sorry, Mr. Loomis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. This is more of a housekeeping measure than anything else. In fact, about two, three years ago, we appointed Pat Whitten as the administrator of the process for approving reimbursements to the Tri-Center for public infrastructure dedicated to the county. Since his retirement, he needs to be replaced. This resolution would appoint Mr. Osborne as the administrator of that process.
Very good. Do you have any questions for Keith?
No, sir.
Any public comment regarding this item, Ms. Park? Dean Haymore might have been the administrator when I first started here, wasn't he?
He was.
Nicole Bart, Story County resident. Just a basic question. I've seen the public-private partnership documents because it's posted on the TRI website. It originally is a contract between Roger et al. And the county. The language here, and I must not have caught this 3 years ago, talks about reimbursement to TRI and other developers. Are other developers under the same agreement that the county signed with Roger?
They can be.
Okay, because TRI is out of there, LLC, correct? So the majority developer now is blockchains, correct? Because they have this.
But most of blockchains, well, yeah, in painted rock, they're not going to be subject to the TRI capital improvement plan because it's outside the TRI center. Project.
Okay, but within the park itself, don't they have 60,000-some-odd acres?
They do.
Okay, so is blockchains under any kind of agreement like we have with Roger, whereby they're responsible for their own infrastructure, and either they're responsible for their own infrastructure and we don't pay for it, or a similar agreement that has different terms?
They would be subject to the terms of the public-private capital improvement plan. There is a provision for other developers to take advantage of that that plan and to benefit or be obligated by the provisions of that plan.
Okay, you said could be. So they can either choose to go under that umbrella and those reimbursements go on as always with that agreement, or can they choose not to go under that umbrella and therefore another agreement has to be done?
If they choose not to go under that agreement, they will not necessarily be entitled to reimbursement.
Okay, well, that's my question. We're authorizing a reimbursement, and as I said, I must not have caught this 3 years ago. If it's the same deal that we've had with TRI that I'm familiar with, I'm fine. But the other developer comment in here is what caught my eye, and unless they're under the original agreement, it would require a different agreement, and I would expect a different authorization for reimbursement.
There wouldn't be a separate agreement, but you could have a corporation come in and do major improvements in the industrial park, build roads, and that, bring them up to the stuff and dedicate them to the county, and they would be entitled to the reimbursement, which is the same as Roger Norman is.
But Roger,
because this district is a public-private partnership within the TRI itself.
Okay, and the reimbursement itself isn't my issue. It's the terms we have, which are screaming, to the extent that we don't pay interest, and
right.
Those terms are what I'm asking.
Terms wouldn't change.
Okay, so everything stays the same, even with new developers.
And then get in line.
Okay.
Get in line behind the other guy who's in front of you to get reimbursed.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Ms. Bard, also, just so you know, make sure when we talk about that umbrella, if a company were to go and build their own road and keep it as a private road for themselves, there would be nothing that would be subject to the county be involved in that. But if they were to build a road to our standards and it falls into the development agreement and then it's dedicated to us, then the terms of that agreement would apply, and that does happen.
And you made the comment that Painted Rock is outside.
They're not inside the TRAC. It applies to the boundaries within Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, not anything else. And even companies that are located very close and in the area, they are not in the TRI and therefore not subject to this.
Okay.
And one of the other requirements is that if a project is dedicated, public infrastructure is dedicated to the county, that the entity dedicating the project would have to comply with prevailing wage under our agreement with the labor commissioner.
Okay.
If they don't comply with the labor commissioner requirements, then they're not entitled to be reimbursed for their dedicated project.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other public comment? Hearing none, I get a motion to approve this resolution.
I move to approve resolution number 19-552, appointing Austin Osborne as the administrator over the process for reimbursing developers of infrastructure within the TRI Center and dedicated to authorize the chairman to sign.
I've got a motion. I'll second your motion. Move to second to approve resolution 19-552. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. All right, moving along to item number 18, discussion of possible action. Approval of the second reading for the general business license for the Delta Saloon, 18 South C Street, Virginia City, Nevada, 89440. The applicant is Vincent Mafantano. Sheriff Antonoro.
Both this item and the next one I will address, recently came up with the Bonanza and the licensing over there. From what I'm informed by the applicant, they're proceeding with the reconstruction at the Delta. They are anticipating a completion date by the end of this month, and so are seeking to get the licensing in place for when they're opening it. So we submitted the request for the second reading contingent on obtaining their CFO and any inspections that are required. The standard health department stuff, things like that.
Very good. Thank you, Sheriff. So any public comment regarding this item? Hearing none, I get a motion to approve.
I motion to approve the second reading for the general business license for Delta Saloon, 18 South C Street, Virginia City, Nevada, 89440. Applicant is Vincent Malfitano. Pending insurance of CFO.
All right.
Issuance, yeah.
I'll second your motion and move in a second to approve the second reading for the general business license of the Delta. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. At this time, we're going to recess the Story County Board of Commissioners and reconvene as the Story County Liquor License Board, bringing us up to item number 20, discussion of possible action. Approval of the second reading of the on-sale liquor license, off-sale liquor license, and cabaret license for the Delta Saloon, 18 South C Street, Virginia City, Nevada. The applicant is Vincent Malfitano. Pending issuance of a certificate of occupancy. For full disclosure, I too hold a on-sale liquor license and cabaret license in proximity to the Delta Saloon. My voting on this item would not affect this applicant any differently than anyone else. With that said, Sheriff Antonaro.
Same position on this, where they're getting ready to open, or they would like to be able to open as soon as they're done with the reconstruction, where we just went through the whole background check. It's still timely, I believe, so I would suggest that we approve this.
Very good. Thank you, Sheriff. Any public comment regarding this issuance of this license? Hearing none, if I can get a motion to approve.
I motion to approve the second reading for the on-sale liquor license, off-sale liquor license, and cabaret license for the Delta Saloon, 18 South C Street, Virginia City, Nevada, 89440. Applicant is Vincent Malfitano, pending issuance of C of O.
All right, this is a motion. I'll second your motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. This time we're going to recess as the Story County Liquor License Board and reconvene the Story County Board of Commissioners, bringing us up to item number 23, discussion and possible action, a variance request 2019-036 to allow the front and west side yard setbacks for the consideration of a new detached garage to be reduced from the required 30 feet to 18 feet for the front yard setback and from the required 15 feet to 8 feet for the west side yard setback. The property is located at 21371 Crestview Road, Virginia City, Highlands, Story County, Nevada. Assessor's parcel number 003-181-17. Ms. Canfield.
Thank you. This is a variance application for a modification to the front and side yard setbacks. The property is located in the Virginia City Highland 1-acre properties. The property itself is a diamond shape with the road on a very small portion of one corner and the house in the opposing corner. The house itself was built in 1996, and at that time they had the option of selecting which property line was going to be their front yard. The people that built that at the time, they selected the north property line was their front yard, and the house was built to meet the setbacks at that time. They are requesting that the front yard to put in the detached garage. They would like the front yard to have an 18-foot front yard setback and an 8-foot side yard setback. The front yard setback is actually the side yard setback for the property to the north because it's not a typical lot size, lot block area. We've received letters of support for the garage location from the people that own property to the north and the people that own property to the east. And because of the shape and the topography, the existing development, the applicant looked at different locations they could potentially put the garage, and because of the septic system.
Let's give it about 20-second rest, and we'll let that wind down. Go ahead and continue.
Okay. The applicant, we when he first came in and was talking about the problems he had, we had him do an analysis of why the garage didn't fit in some other locations, and we've included that in the staff report at the end. But because there's a drainage, natural drainage flow that goes through the middle of the property and where the septic system is and his utility lines and that, staff is supportive of his request for a variance. The Planning Commission also recommended approval with a vote to 4-0. We had 2 absent and then 1 vacancy at that point. And the applicant himself couldn't be here today, but he was present at the Planning Commission meeting.
Okay, very good. Do you have any questions, Jack?
No.
And we always find that the Highlands will always end up with these odd-shaped lots that make it really difficult to develop a property. And I always like to see people who want to improve their property by adding like garages and things like that too. Increases their property value, increases the tax collection for the county. Any public comment regarding this item? Everybody's in support of this, so unless you have any objections, I'll ask Kathy to read the findings of fact and for the affirmative for approval on this.
Go for it.
Okay. This variance 2019-036, allows the front and west side yard setbacks for the construction of a new detached garage to be reduced from the required 30 feet to 18 feet for the front yard setback and from the required 15 feet to 8 feet for the west side yard setback. The property is located at 21371 Crestview Road, Virginia City Highlands, Storey County, Nevada, assessor's parcel number APN 003-181-17. The subject property is located within a state's E1 VCH zoning in which single-family residents are an allowed use and detached garages are an allowed accessory use. That because of special circumstances applicable to the subject property, including shape, size, topography, or location of surroundings, the strict application of the zoning ordinance would deprive the subject property of privileges enjoyed by other properties in the vicinity or under identical zone classification. That the granting of the variance is necessary for the preservation and enjoyment of substantial property rights of the applicant. That the granting of the variance will not, under the circumstances of the particular case, adversely affect to a material degree the health or safety of persons residing or working in the area of the subject property and will not be materially detrimental to the public welfare or materially injurious to property or improvements in the area of the subject property. The proposed variance is in compliance with all federal, Nevada, state, and Storey County regulations. The proposed variance is in compliance with Storey County Code 17.03.140, variances and 17.12 general provisions and 17.40 E estate zone when all conditions of approval are met. The proposed variance is in compliance with and supports the goals, objectives, and policies of the 2016 Storey County Master Plan.
Thank you, Kathy. All right. With that, I get a motion to approve.
All right. In accordance with the recommendation by staff and the Planning Commission, the finding of fact under Section 3A of this report and other findings deemed appropriate by the Board of County Commissioners and in compliance with the conditions of approval, I, Jay Carmona, move to approve variance 2019-036 to allow the front and west side yard setbacks for the construction of a new detached garage to be reduced from the required 30 feet to 18 feet for the front yard setback and from the required 15 feet to 8 feet for the west side yard setback. Property is located at 21371 Crestview Road, Virginia City Highlands, Storey County, Nevada. Assessor's parcel number APN 003-181-17.
Okay, I have a motion. I'll second your motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Moving along now to item number 24, discussion of possible action, approval of business license, second readings. So, is there any public comment regarding these business license, second readings? Hearing none, I get a motion to approve.
I make a motion to approve the second reading of the business licenses.
Second your motion. Moved and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Moving along now to the final item on the agenda today. Number 25 is public comment. Any public comment? Hearing none, See you in 2 weeks.